Hey everyone, this is Car Ray Rob.
I'm Ray.
I'm Rob, and we want to welcome you to our podcast. Say hello to my little film.
Hey there, it'll be just a little while till Ray and Rob spit their spittle. Come on, check out of the hospital.
It really does not feel like we have already reached episode 6.
I know, we're like old hats at this now.
I mean, how old do you think this podcast is in dog years?
Well, 6.
Oh, is that how that works?
that's how I do
that. Fair enough. Well, welcome everyone to our 6-year-old.
I hope you've listened to all 6 episodes.
Thank you. Oh, if you have, thank you. But as we said, this is episode 6 of Say Hello to My Little Film, where we bring fresh perspectives to retrospective reviews. And this week, it's Ray's episode. So, what do you got?
What do you got?
All right, Rob, what I got for you is it's a movie I love, which is, that's the rules.
Well, it's a good rule and a rule to follow.
It's a movie you haven't seen. That checks rule number 2.
Man, we are moving right along here.
And this movie that I'm presenting to you, my little film that I'm presenting to you, is Brian and Charles.
Oh, I vaguely remember. Is this a movie about a man with a robot?
This is a movie.
Or a cardboard box.
Yeah, they're one and the same.
Oh, okay. Yes.
This is a movie about a lonely man
who,
during one harsh winter, creates a robot.
Okay.
Befriends said robot.
Okay.
And then the movie just, you know, takes off from there. This is one of the things I like about this movie that I think is interesting is, like, I love this movie. Mm-hmm. It's not an Academy Award winning movie. It was nominated for some like BAFTAs and stuff. Like it's good, you know.
Okay.
It's good.
I wasn't aware of that.
But it's like you know, and I think that's kind of what's interesting about our podcast is what we love isn't always like doesn't mean it has to be a classic.
Oh, it's true.
Doesn't mean it has to be good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we think it's good.
Yeah, to me it is. Doesn't mean it will be to you or to everybody else who's listening.
Fair
but it's what we love,
right?
And so, this movie stars David Earle and Chris Hayward. They are also the writers of the movie. Now David Earle is, if you have watched any Ricky Gervais TV shows, you'll recognize him. Mm-hmm. Like he's in all of his stuff, and
like his version of The Office, or
okay,
extras.
Maybe he's not in that. He might not be. He's in a lot of the other stuff. I've never watched. Yeah, I don't think he's in The Office.
Okay,
and I don't know if he's in Extras either. I've never watched Extras.
So he's not in any of his shows.
He's been in 2 shows that I've seen, Ricky Gervais's, and that's all that matters.
You promised me he was in every episode. I distinctly heard that 10 seconds
Play
ago.
Back.
You said you promised me every show.
Okay, he's in a lot of things with Ricky Gervais, and he plays kind of the same guy.
A lot of heavy lifting here.
He plays kind of the same guy.
Okay.
Very brash, but now this is a PG movie, so he, you know, I think the David is kind of forced to hone the character in a lot, and I think it works. I think to the benefit. This will be a movie I think within the first 5 minutes, and this is what this probably the thing I love most about the movie is within the first 5 minutes you are, I think, in love with Brian to the point where you're like, I'm ready to watch this dude for a half hour.
Okay.
And so that's my challenge to you is don't fall in love with him in the first 5 minutes.
And run away with Brian.
Yeah. And then just go on for the ride. You know, it's fun. It deals with some topics that similar to some stuff we've addressed before, so it'd be cool to see some callbacks, but it does it in a unique way with a robot.
This is a British movie.
This is a British movie.
So it's like kind of the Ricky Gervais universe that he's fully a part of.
Right.
Clearly.
Very clearly.
Very clearly.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's
very
cool.
British. And so, you know, it's funny because the first movie I did in the podcast for episode 2 was a mockumentary.
Right.
It's very quite possible the next movie I do on episode 8 will be a mockumentary. And this movie isn't quite a mockumentary. It's filmed like a regular movie for 95% of it, but he does talk to people behind the camera who you never see. So I guess he is being documented. There's no explanation on like why he's being documented or like what their plans are to do with this documentary. But but it's weird because he does talk to people behind the camera, but it's other than that, like it's not a mockumentary other than that.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think I remember watching the trailer and I think I was vaguely intrigued. You know, I think maybe for me, the one thing that maybe kind of stood in my way from ever checking this movie out was just I didn't know if it was a movie that would overcome like the gimmick, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious to see if, you know, again, vague, so I don't remember exactly the trailer.
Yeah.
But I like I said, I remember the robot.
Right.
I remembered that in the cardboard box looking.
It's a washing machine.
Oh, is it?
His body is the washing machine.
Oh, it's a washing machine. Okay, fair enough. A box. I knew it was a box of some kind.
Yes.
Okay. So cool. Yeah. No. I'm excited to check it out.
It's a good. You're right though. You know, it's like we've seen guys make robots before. Now, what happens next? And you know, is it different enough? But like I said, this is just something where you just root for the character so hard. You I mentioned he's lonely. You want to see that, you know, that bridge gapped for him. And it's lovely, and thus I love it.
Okay, well, fair enough. Well, Ray has officially sold me on it. I will not refuse his request to watch this film, so I think we are going to do that right now. So we invite all of you to pause the podcast if you have not seen Brian and Charles and check it out, and then come back and see if I agree with Ray that this is a movie to love.
Ray and Rob are currently watching The Film. You may be also watching The Film. If you're not, then you're listening to me say that Ray and Rob are watching The Film. They'll be right back when they're done watching The Film.
All right, folks, we are back. Rob has watched Brian and Charles. I have watched it again. Rob, I kind of set it up. I hope I didn't oversell, but I kind of said the first 5 minutes you were going to fall in love with this character. Did it work?
I would say that in the first 5 minutes, I definitely felt a strong attraction, love to Brian. Brian.
Yeah. It's hard to not just be like, want to support him.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. He's a very lovable character. I mean, he has a lovable appearance, like, even though he's a, you know, bit of a, you know,
like you feel you're handsomer than he is kind of guy.
Sure. You know, but yeah, he's kind of got that schlubby appearance. But even beyond that, his attitude is magnetic in a way that I think is really great.
He's a lead who you want to just like root for, right? You want to root for his success. You're like, all right, I've known you for 5 minutes, but I want you to win at whatever this movie is going to throw at you.
Right. Yeah, he's very optimistic, even when his inventions seem to fail, and you know how many of them are really successful. It's, you know, it's hard to tell.
Maybe some his trash can where he puts his cabbages in is successful, but
right. Or his was it his trawling his or trawler. Trawlers for feet, like her shoes.
Oh, yeah. The shoe trawlers.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Shoe trawlers. That's what he called them. Yeah. And like, so it's like, I'm sure they work, but do you want that to work?
Right. His pine cone bag works.
His pine cone. It's very fashionable.
Yeah.
It's very fashionable.
You know, every time I watch this movie, you know, I rewatch the first 10 seconds like 10 times just because it's just like, it's like beautiful to me. Like, it's just this moment where, you know, basically the screen is pitch black and you just come into the movie with this voiceover that says, I was very low. And then you just see this guy working on an invention, hammering along. And you're like, oh, what were you, what? Why are you low? Like, what's going on? And he turns into his cheerful personality, which you see a lot of in the introductions to him at first, where it's like, he knows things don't always happen great. He said his life has gone topsy-turvy, but quickly he can see the other side of it.
Yeah.
And he even has a cool moment where he's like, you know, his philosophy on life is when one door closes, another door opens. And when that door closes, another one opens that. But even in that line,
doors open and close, no getting away from it.
Right. But he says it so long that eventually, you know, he said it so many times that eventually he's like, I hope you know, another one open. So you start to see that aspect of him too. It's like he's got this personality that, like, I always think something good is going to happen, but I also in the back of his mind, he's worried that it won't. You know, I just think they have a lot of those moments where it's like it's something quaint and pretty and beautiful, but there's that hint of like loneliness and worry in it that you know we all feel. So I just, like, you know, he's just so relatable to me.
Yeah, there's a kind of like a rugged individualism to him, like, yeah, where it's like he seems on the surface to be very confident about who he is, but you can tell that there is a need for companionship, which is obviously what leads to the, you know, the overall story of this movie of him creating Charles. But, you know, it's interesting to me because with being as likable of a character as he is and being as clearly detached from the world around him as he is, there is really one question that really kind of sticks out in my mind, you know, that I kept asking myself the entire time I'm watching the movie.
And that was,
who is filming this movie?
Yeah, as I kind of said in the, in our section before this, you know, like, it's kind of a mockumentary. Sometimes you forget that it's being filmed like a mockumentary.
But is it? Because like you said, there are those moments when, you know, clearly there's I wasn't sure how many moments he would be kind of talking to the crew or breaking the fourth wall, whatever.
Yeah.
From your description. But it was way more than what I anticipated.
Yeah.
And especially from, like, watching the trailer and stuff. But I have a theory. Have a kind of an out there theory, and I think it kind of encapsulates a lot of my thoughts about this movie and about Brian and Charles as characters and, like, what this movie is ultimately trying to say.
Well, let's hear it.
So, as far as, I don't think anybody is filming this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think this is supposed to be a mockumentary. I think Brian is filming this movie in his mind. I think he sees himself as an inventor. Maybe even somewhat of a famous inventor in his mind that somebody might make a movie about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if this were a situation where he had already made Charles and then it was like, oh, well, now a mockumentary is coming to, you know, or a documentary, quote unquote, crew is coming to film him because he made this robot, I'd be like, okay. But he's essentially a nobody in the beginning of this movie.
Yeah.
And there's a documentary crew series following him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're there. And so I think this is kind of him in his mind, you know, whether it be somewhat delusional or just, you know, maybe that's too harsh of a word, but it's just this kind of self-aggrandizement.
Yeah.
And this need to be seen as a specific way. And that is why he is having this documentary made about him. And
Rob did air quotes there, just so you know.
Oh, thank you. That's true. Yeah. Nobody can see that.
Right.
But so, yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, I wrote down a couple things. Like, you know, is the crew real? Which, again, I just kind of went into. So there are moments like, so, okay, the scene where the meter reader comes in.
Right.
Like, you know, I think there were a couple scenes, instances where, maybe somebody looked. I'm not sure I didn't notice if the meter reader did. I don't think he did. I remember there was a scene with Eddie, the antagonist, at one point where he kind of looks. But in most of these movies, you know, it's almost kind of a staple cliche of a mockumentary movie is when, you know, a character enters a situation that it's like outside of, you know, his normal space. Somebody notices the crew and it's like, well, what's all this? Like,
yeah,
you know,
they address it.
Right. And somebody, you know, acknowledges that there are people in this room that are not supposed to be here. You know what I mean? Even if, like, if, you know, whatever this situation that's happening between the main character and this other person is, there's these other people that are there filming it for some inexplicable reason.
Their natural reaction would be to, why is there a camera here?
And especially with somebody like the meter reader, like, you would think that that would happen in that scene, but it didn't.
And yeah, I can't, like, remember if I think if he looked at the camera or not.
I don't think he did. I think there was one instance when Eddie did, but, like,
I can't remember if Hazel necessarily does.
Right. But, you know, so it really kind of leads me to this idea that, like I said, it's a need to be seen and a need to be seen a specific way. And like I said, I think it's so layered throughout the movie, like his fear of the outside world, which again we'll kind of get to in relationship to Charles eventually. But even when it comes to, you know, the people in his town that he does have interactions with, you know, it's not like he's a hermit that never leaves his house. Like, he does interact with people, but I think he's just so kind of afraid that in the, you know, in the outside world that there's this awkwardness to him.
Oh, definitely there's an awkwardness. You know, do you think, you know, with just like thinking of it as a, you know, from as a filmmaker's tool to just choose, you know, to choose the format of mockumentary. You know, one thing I always kind of think about this movie, because I do feel like something like, you know, like I said, in my, you know, what I kind of think of in the before section is, you know, it's like the movie forgets it's a mockumentary sometimes, and it's, you know, in the way it's filmed and such. And maybe that's kind of what your point, like that, it, you know, that people aren't always acknowledging the camera, you know, that really only Charles and, well, Charles, you know, definitely does, Charles and Brian, but do you think it helps the movie, like that format, or do you think it could have been shot like a, you know, like a normal movie?
No, I think it absolutely helps it. I think it, again, it kind of like, you know, in those types of movies, you know, we've done a, you know, we did What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah.
Is that the other documentary?
Yeah. So far, my next movie might be another one, but yes.
Okay, fair enough.
That's what I said before.
My God, man, what are you doing? But yeah, it's so yeah. I mean, in a lot of these movies, you know, I do think the, as we've said with like What We Do in the Shadows, it's interesting because they are, you know, can be used to kind of bring a realism to something that's not necessarily real, you know, vampires and. This one, it's so somewhat the same because it's, again, it's this guy making a robot. Not that that's that unrealistic. Right. It's pretty common in our world now.
Where functional AI.
Functional AI, exactly. That, yeah. That's a bit different. But
and I also, I think in this movie especially, you get that, you know, it's like a cheat code for exposition when you can have the guy look at the camera and tell you exactly what he's thinking. You don't need another character to come in and pose the question or have to put in, you know, a scene that has every scenario that you want to get out of his brain, because he's just going to look at the camera and tell you what he's thinking.
Absolutely.
And so, and it helps you get attached to Brian, who's a character you have to get attached to quickly, you know, I think in the movie. And so, you know, it's a useful tool in that way.
Well, especially
sure.
A loner character.
Yeah.
Like Brian, because you're right. Like
there's nobody else for him to talk to.
Exactly. And, you know, even in a situation where it's like with Hazel or, you know, the shopkeeper or, you know, whatever, like his openness isn't there, you know, again, he's awkward. Like, he'll say these things and he'll seem like on the surface, like a pleasant person because he is, he's not an unpleasant person by any means, but he still doesn't open himself up to those human relationships until he eventually does that with Hazel, which again, we'll get to, I'm sure, once we broach Charles as a character.
Right. Well, maybe we should broach Charles. You know, I think, you know, the movie, you know, kind of turns into something very interesting, I think, when Charles comes around. And, you know, we kind of mentioned that that Brian is an inventor, and I don't think we mentioned, but, you know, at the beginning of the movie, he invents the cuckoo clock.
Right.
And the cuckoo clock is put together inside a shopping cart that's attached to a bicycle.
Right.
That he's going to fly above the city. What I just love about, you know, I just think this character, you know, he talks to the camera, he says, by the, you know, I'm gonna get to the end of the corner, I'll be going about 90 miles per hour, then I'll take off and start flying. I'm like, well, that's optimism.
Right.
You're gonna get this bike to 90 miles per hour.
Are you gonna go faster than a DeLorean?
Yeah. Which, well, that doesn't work.
Right.
And so, and then I think, you know, I think you mentioned the quote where he says, you know, he does, or he mentioned the idea that he doesn't get upset when his inventions don't necessarily work. Right. He's just going to keep making another one.
On to the next one.
And then he makes Brian.
Right.
And, you know, right away, Brian doesn't work. You know, he flips Brian on a couple times. Mm-hmm. He doesn't work. And then you see a moment in Brian. I'm sorry. Charles doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You see a moment from Brian where you do see some disappointment and you feel for him because you're like, you know, it's not just a normal invention. When he started to make this robot, you could tell he was making a companion. Mm-hmm. Which is addressing this loneliness that we're starting to, that we have noticed as a, you know, as a viewer of this film.
Yeah.
And I think they give you those glimpses of that disappointment in Brian and keep him kind of rounded character. And I think it's brilliant when they do that kind of little, those little things.
Absolutely. I think, you know, Charles is the creation of Charles is interesting to me because he refers to him as a robot, but there's actually a couple things about his creation that make me feel like Brian wanted him to be a real person.
Yeah.
And it's interesting little thing. So like there's that part when he doesn't work and he's going through it and it's like, oh, his spleen is working.
Right.
You know, and he pulls out the glowing ball. It's like the spleen. Well, robots don't have spleens.
Spleen is working. Yeah.
So why? Well, you know. Yeah. So the fact that he sees this robot having a spleen is an interesting kind of tell. Even before that,
most robots don't eat cabbage though either. And Charles eats a bunch of cabbage.
There you go. He loves cabbage. He even draws it in his pictures, which is great. But yeah, I mean, the beginnings of it where he's kind of like digging through the trash and it's kind of, he finds the head that ultimately becomes Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he's, picking out pieces. And there's one point where he picks out a little like metal disc looking thing and he calls it a belly button.
Yeah.
Like, look, belly button. And it's like, it's that kind of interesting idea of like a live birth. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, why would a robot have a belly button? Like,
right.
It's not a live birth. So it's those little things that, in my mind, like, I think Brian ultimately, like, wanted him to be human. It's like, the Pinocchio thing. Like, he's going to be
definitely.
A real boy, you know?
Yeah, because he didn't want a robot to help pluck cabbages around the house. He wanted somebody to be a friend. You
right.
know what he wanted? He wanted somebody to play darts with. You know, and
exactly.
and that's what he was creating. That's why it's kind of heartbreaking at first when Charles doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there is a point, you know, once he gets going, you know, Charles starts to learn how to communicate rather quickly. He reads
mm-hmm.
the dictionary overnight and, you know, their relationship, you know, starts to evolve.
Yeah.
And it's funny how they use Charles because he kind of goes through like cycles of life in a way or childhood.
Right. Absolutely.
But, you know, kind of before we get into that, you know, they become friends. And I think to the point that we were just making, you know, there's a scene in the movie where Charles says to Brian, you are my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you look at Brian in that moment, and congrats to David Earl, the actor, for holding the moment, but it's just like, it looks like Brian hasn't been said to Brian in a long time.
Yeah.
And you just, again, as a viewer, you're connected to this friendship for
yeah.
the rest of the movie.
Absolutely. I think, and you know, and they had a very, there was a great chemistry between them.
Yeah.
For being a robot, quote unquote robot,
mm-hmm.
and a person. You know, I think it was genuine from the start,
mm-hmm.
which I think even like when in that scene when he names him, you know, when he lets Charles like, you know, pick his name.
Charles Petrescu.
I'm gonna laugh every time I hear it. I'm gonna laugh every time I hear it. But it's, you know, I think it's a testament to the actor David Earl and to the actor who plays Charles,
his name is Chris Hayward.
Perfect. So I think they did a lot of legwork in that regard right
yeah.
off the bat. And one thing that I think is very interesting about Brian and Charles kind of going forward is this idea of knowledge versus experience.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of, that divergence, or I should say that those two things kind of happen right up front, because like you said, Charles reads the dictionary in a night,
right?
So knowledge is very easy for him, and it's easily obtained and retained, and he can stockpile that knowledge, you know, at a rapid pace. Experience is different, you know.
Sure.
It's a completely different thing, and I think that's one way that their relationship is similar and diverges as the movie goes forward.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I kind of see, you know, I think when you see the beginnings of this movie, you're going to see some kind of buddy movie. You know, I think a lot of, you know, even this, you know, maybe the use of robots a lot is like a buddy cop type, you know, movie thing. But this movie really is a little bit different because it's really more like a parent-kid movie.
Absolutely.
And Charles is the kid. And so, like you said, you know, and we've kind of talked about some of these ideas in a couple of our of these early podcasts we've done, where like it's parents' unwillingness to let go,
mm-hmm.
and their parents' unwillingness to see what their kids have become,
yeah.
that affect a lot of the relationships. And that quickly happens with Charles and Brian, because Charles grows up kind of like, you know, he starts off the movie as kind of a kid. You see him kind of going to some teenage angst years,
right?
As you know, as he, and then you know, eventually, you know, maybe the college years where you want to come home and go off on your own. But you're right, because you know, then it's the knowledge where they're very similar, like you just mentioned, and then the experiences are kind of, you know, where Brian is more of the parent, because he's had experiences, you know, we assume, mm-hmm. and he kind of hides from getting exposed to too many more.
Right.
Where to, in my opinion, Charles, since he knows he doesn't have any experiences, he wants to experience the world. And then some ways Brian holds him back from doing that.
Absolutely.
Or tries to.
And you know, it, going into when we've talked about this in previous movies, it's the same here. It all stems from fear.
Right.
I mean, there's even a moment when the doorbell, you know, we mentioned mm-hmm. the meter reader earlier, like the doorbell, Brian's reaction to the doorbell is just, you know, that the dread that comes over him in that moment, because somebody's going to be entering their world,
right.
and could see Charles or,
yeah.
I actually go back, you know, to be fair, I'm going to say this. I do actually wonder if, you know, I wrote down on my notes, like, why is Brian afraid to show off Charles?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think on the surface, you might be able to say, you know, oh, well, part of it is because of, like, Eddie, you know, the bully,
right.
which I'm sure we'll get to in a minute. But I am actually of the idea that, you know, now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, that it's not so much that Brian is afraid to show off Charles. Brian's afraid to show the world to Charles.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's a I didn't mean if I cut you off there.
Go for it.
But there's a, you know, there's a scene, kind of like what you're saying, like the cottage that Brian lives at is his world. And like, as you mentioned, when the meter guy comes into it, it's people, you know, coming into his world, which is scary to him. But early in the movie, you hear that there's a, you know, Charles kind of in a poignant, like childish, you know, very simple way says, does it all stop at the tree? And he's looking at mm-hmm. the tree that's outside the fence.
Right.
And he's basically asking, does the world stop at that tree? And Brian's like, well, no, it goes on, you know. It goes on heaps, and then Charles immediately wants to then go to that. He wants to leave this safe space, this world that Brian's created, like almost immediately. He wants to experience.
Yeah.
And Brian is like, nope, you're not allowed to do that. You can't leave this. And I think it's to your point. I don't think he wants to share him or risk losing him, you know, to the outside world, to everybody else.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because we've talked a lot about, you know, parent-child relationships, but I think in certain regards, you know, Brian himself is a bit stunted in that regard, you know, I mean, and that's why yeah. in the end, the bully character isn't Charles's bully, it's Brian's.
Right.
So I think, and again, that's something you see of more in a child character, you know, kid-teen character mm-hmm. than you do in an adult character. Not that you don't see them, obviously, you know, adults have bullies too, but there is just a childlike wonderment to Brian
yeah.
that I think it, you know, it's interesting that they kind of start out on that same footing and then, like I said earlier, kind of diverge into two different worldviews. Now, granted, Brian grows. I don't want anybody to think
right,
that.
Yeah.
Like, while Charles is, like, wanting to go to the, you know, edges of the earth to mm-hmm. explore.
It's Honolulu.
Honolulu.
He wants to go to Honolulu. He gets addicted to the idea of going to Hawaii.
But Brian does have his own growth, and that it yeah. comes in the form of Hazel.
Right, yes. You know, she kind of pops up here and there throughout the movie. There's chemistry between the two. They both are kind of living in certain circumstances where Hazel's kind of trapped into the mundane life that she's living, you know, with her taking care of her mother or, you know, whatever that situation exactly is. They don't go into much. And it's because of Charles that Brian is exposed to Hazel. And that opens the door for Brian's growth of letting somebody in and starting to experience that, you know, letting things in isn't the worst thing, you
right.
know, or experiencing things again isn't the worst thing. Mm-hmm. And that's where he starts to find, I think, the ideas of what he'll do with Charles.
One of the interesting things that I you know, kind of like about the Hazel-Charles-Brian kind of triangle is, like, Charles kind of pushes them together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's like, oh, you should invite her to come to the lake,
right?
You know, and it's
you guys do your thing, I'll do my thing,
right? So it's like, you know, it's hard to tell, like, if Charles wants her to come because he's trying to matchmake, and then gets kind of buyer's remorse in that because, like, oh, Brian is, you know, ignoring him because he does mm-hmm. get annoyed when Brian starts like, well, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing? Like, are you doing whatever? And yeah. Don't step your toes in the water, whatever. But you're right. It also could be like this idea of like, oh, I need a distraction. I need to find you somebody so I can leave. You know, like that kind of
thing. Well, because even, you know, another scene, or I think the ending of that like lake scene where he's trying to dip his toes in the water, you know, Charles gets a little mouthy toward Brian in front of Hazel, and Brian says, you know, I don't like hanging around with you as much anymore. Yeah. And then Charles responds with, well, then let me go.
Right.
and to me, that just seems like it's just such that parent kid aspect. If you know, like, you're the one bottling me up. If you don't like me bottled up, then let me go. I just love how they toy with those themes. Because Charles is going through, you know, like I said, mentioned earlier, that teenage angst. He's listening to rock music.
Right. He's closing himself up in his bedroom and you know, angry.
He becomes very cheeky.
Yeah.
He wants to leave all the time, and it's tough. Yeah. You know, it's
little comment.
Yeah. Lots of little comments. You know, it's lots of little comments that Brian likes less and less.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it kind of culminates with, you mentioned the bully character, Eddie.
Yeah.
Who, you know, is in a couple scenes is you know, proven to be a thorn in Brian's side.
Yeah. But he's really the whole town.
Yes, the whole town. Not just Brian. He's not Brian's bully. He really is the town's bully. He ends up kidnapping Charles. And you know, like in any great movie where the family is starting to be split apart, there has to be that thing that pulls them back together.
Yeah.
And for me, when you see Charles with like chains on him, he's being used like an ox.
Right.
It pulls it back together.
You know? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when he walks up and like Charles is like, I want to go home.
Yes.
And you're just like, oh God.
I know.
It was a bit heart wrenching in that moment. But you know, it's interesting, because with a bully character like that, it really was, as I said earlier, the whole town that was kind of allowing this guy to act the way that he did, to be perfectly honest. You know what I mean? And you watch that and you're kind of like, why don't you just go to the cops? You know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't you just go to the police? Yeah. But the whole town is kind of co-signed on to just letting this guy do these kind of things, which is an interesting kind of aspect, I guess, of this story.
Yeah, I think that is a kind of this theme that like people are more than just what they seem, or they're, and almost kind of mean the opposite way what you think when you say like people are more than they seem, because you know it's like, you know, when you see like when Hazel meets Charles for the first time, she says, what are you? And he says, I'm Charles Petrescu. And you know, like, he sees himself as a man, as a person,
right?
Where she was asking like, what are you? You're a robot. And I think, you know, Brian sees himself as a loner and you know, not really able to, you know, get into a relationship at first, and then that's incorrect. And I think the town sees Eddie as this being that they can't do anything about, and quickly realize, yeah, we can, you know, so I think this misrepresentation of what your eyes see and what is really there, that, you know, because of fear in a lot of situations, you know, it's something they kind of toy with in those circumstances.
Definitely. And it's interesting to have a, you know, a character arc, not just be for a person, but a whole town.
Yeah.
Because it does kind of, you know, happen that way in the end, when the final confrontation takes place.
Yeah, it's kind of like that whole, you know, Spider-Man, like, you know, the early Spider-Man movies. You got to fight the whole town if you're going to. But so it's like kind of like that, but it's mostly, I mean, Brian does most of the legwork.
Right. That's fair. Yeah. And it's great, too, because I think, you know, in a lot of instances, you see this in a lot of other bully movies, whether it be like The Karate Kid or, you know, name a bunch of different ones.
Yeah.
Like this idea of like in the end, when you fight back your bully, like you punch him in the face, you know, or whatever. And like I appreciated how Brian was able to not sink to Eddie's level where it was like physical violence per se,
right?
But he used his inventions.
He got some inventions to work.
Right, exactly. The cabbage gun and then the ultimate
super shover or something
like that, which was just, it was so great. And I mean, it really worked, man. It knocked Eddie right back into the truck. It was great.
Sure did. And Hazel inspired him to fight for Charles, you know, which I think was good too. So.
Yeah.
And then as this movie should, it ends with Brian letting Charles go. He buys Charles a ticket around the world,
yep.
which, whatever that means, I would like to get one of those.
Just around the world.
Yeah. It's definitely stopping at Honolulu Loop first. but you know, he gets to the point, you know, he got Charles back from Eddie, and he was then ready to embrace his life with Hazel. He's not going to be alone, and he understands that Charles needs to do his thing.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's on the nose, but it works. It's what needed to happen, and it's fun.
Well, will Charles ever come home? Will Brian ever see Charles again?
He sends postcards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We do see that.
Yeah, but does he ever come home?
That's
he ever,
the sequel.
Right, exactly. I want to know. Brian and Charles 2, Charles comes home.
Yeah, exactly. And what is that like?
I don't know. He's very bored at home. He's like, man, or maybe it's quite the opposite. Like, I've seen everything now. This is great. I love
cabbages.
This chair. Yeah. I just want to sit in this chair.
That's how I feel. I mean, good Lord, I just want to sit in a comfortable chair most days. Hi, Rob. So, you know, I shoved this movie on you. Not sure if you had high expectations, but let us know what you thought about it, and if you would recommend this to people going forward.
You know, I will say, you know, watching the trailer, I had a few trepidations, because movies like this that have that kind of, you know, hook that is, and especially when it's around an art direction piece, like a set piece, so like a quirky robot,
yeah,
or
robot,
like,
with the washing machine for a body,
right, or, you know, things like that, you know, or, you know, something like Brigsby Bear.
Yeah,
I remember we watched that movie a long time ago, like Brigsby Bear, or you know, Gentleman Broncos, you know, these kind of like indie twee type movies that, you know, they really rely so hard on aesthetics, the quirky aesthetics, that you kind of, you know, can lose the story.
Yeah.
I think somebody who does it really well is Miranda July, who has directed Me and You and Everyone We Know, The Future. And I think this movie kind of taps into the same humanity that she does.
Mm-hmm.
I think in Brian and Charles, they were able to kind of bridge get over the hump of
that.
Be more than just this like quirky set piece and or this quirky character, this like quirky hook. And they actually told a really great story about a guy who really needed to get out of his own shell. And instead of, you know, having a manic pixie princess, he creates a big boxy robot.
Right.
So
right.
That kind of pushes him, you know, to be the person that he needs to be. So I, in the end, yes, I did very much enjoy Brian and Charles. It kind of, you know, surpassed my expectations, I would say that. And I would definitely recommend the movie to other people.
Great.
You know, I think for other people that might, you know, look at a movie like what I was kind of mentioning before and feel that kind of, you know, standoffishness to it, I think that they would kind of feel the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I hope. So that's what I was hoping when I recommended it to you. You know, like I said, it's a movie where if you judge it by its cover, you're going to see this buddy comedy, you know, oh, it's a robot. Okay, so this is Short Circuit, you know, an indie version of Short Circuit or something like that. And I think it does enough to avoid the cliches, have the humanity. And, you know, as I kind of express a lot, I like rooting for characters. I like seeing characters grow and develop and change. And I feel like this movie does enough where it has a bunch of rewatchability for me. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ray and I already have our flight booked to Honolulu, but before we make our way to the airport, Ray, what have you been watching?
I'm kind of in the middle of a lot of stuff, Rob, but one thing that I did finish was the Prime movie Ricky Stenicki.
Ricky Stenicki?
Starring Zac Efron and John Cena.
It's a fairly brother movie, right? Just one, isn't it?
Just one,
just
yeah.
One, yeah.
Just
okay,
one.
That's what I thought.
So, yeah, so it was okay. It was like there, it had its funny parts. I was definitely chuckling out loud a couple times.
Sure.
I thought John Cena was really good.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I love the concept of the movie, but I didn't love like the way it played out. But I found the concept to be hilarious. Like it really should have worked.
I did watch the trailer for that. So I was on the fence about watching it. So now that you've said that, I think I will definitely check it out now that you've said that.
Yeah.
But I like Cena.
Yeah, I do too. And he's kind of continuing off that peacemaker, like, you know, vibe where he's just being really silly and funny. And don't know. He does a really good job. So, you know, Zac Efron's kind of more of a straight man. He's fine in it, too. But the other two guys, I really never got behind. Like, I really kind of felt like, maybe miscast. I don't know. They were okay. They just never, like, really hit for me.
It's hard in an ensemble comedy like that. You know, if you think of one of the great ones, like 40-Year-Old Virgin or Anchorman. Like
all those guys got to lift their weight, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's hard. So if you're in a group comedy and, like, half the cast is funny and half the cast is kind of meh.
Yeah,
I could see it definitely losing.
Yeah, but I love the concept. Should have worked, but and it did in parts. But what about you? What you been checking out?
Well, I've watched two movies. Andrea and I watched Lisa Frankenstein.
Which I'm not sure I've really seen much about that.
It is Robin Williams' daughter's directorial debut, but it was written by Diablo Cody.
Okay.
You know, Juno. Going blank, Tully, everybody, you know, no Diablo Cody, and I will say I'm not a huge Diablo Cody fan. I did enjoy Juno when it came out.
Yeah,
I actually kind of like Jennifer's Body. You know, I know that was kind of like the maybe a little bit of a divisive one. I don't know, but I did enjoy Jennifer's Body to a degree. But I will say I really did not. Like
Lisa
Frankenstein, yeah. It was very weird. The funniest thing is I think they were kind of going for a bit of a John Waters thing. Some of the comedy was like so over the top and kind of out there that you're just like, I don't know. Like it just, I don't feel like it's really jiving for me. You know, the concept was interesting, but. Yeah, I thought as far as like a, you know, Diablo Cody written screenplay, I felt like it. Even for her, I was kind of like, I don't know. But another funny aspect of it was, you know, I looked up the Rotten Tomatoes score, and it's one where like the critic score is low, and the audience score is really high. And
I usually like those kind of movies.
Yeah, you know, you never can tell like what that's gonna bring, you know, because you know a lot of times you're like, oh, that actually could mean that I would really enjoy it. But
agree with the critics this time.
I will say I agree with the critics this time. But
gone corporate on us.
But the second movie I want to talk about is also in the same boat: low critic score, high audience score. And we went to the theater this weekend as a family to see Godzilla X Kong.
Yeah, what does the X mean? Like,
I had no idea.
Times Kong?
I guess, like... yeah. It is a bit of an odd title choice because they're not really against each other like the last iteration, but on this one I will say I was with the audience, the high audience score, because it was actually pretty fun. It was a little bit tighter of a movie than I feel like the last couple have been. They've kind of it was less than 2 hours.
Yeah.
So it, and for, you know, a kaiju movie, it felt kind of compartmentalized, where it was, you know, a bit smaller scale, not necessarily in like the world itself.
Right.
You know, obviously it's, you know, it's big in
it's
that
Hollow
regard.
Earth.
And,
it's
right,
huge scale.
Exactly. And the kaiju battles and all of that. And it still takes place, you know, in certain aspects, you know, in different parts of the world. But the story feels pretty small.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of like building to this like one very distinct moment. And then, you know, that's kind of it. But I think all the characters are great that they brought back from the previous movies and stuff. And I think, you know, the kaiju action was great. My son was super into it.
I was going to say, I really care more about what your son thought about it.
We should have had him here.
Because he's kind of fallen off Legendary a little bit.
He has. He's not as big of a fan of Legendary as he used to be. But he is a big kaiju fan, but he's not as big onto Legendary as he used to be. But this kind of brought him back a little bit because they had some of the more obscure kaiju in there that I think he really enjoyed seeing on
very
screen.
Cool. Well, Rob, this is it. This is the end of our Brian and Charles episode.
Brian
is no longer being talked about because episode's over. Since it's over, we'd like everybody who listens to this podcast to please take the opportunity to like the podcast, comment on the podcast, tell us what you liked about the movie, leave us a 5-star review. We will probably someday read it on air.
We would really be able to like to be able to do that at some point.
That'd be
but,
cool.
You know. They say that at the end of a lot of podcasts, and I just don't know how often it happens. But we're going to try it at some point down the road. But if there is a comment section, Now, that we there, would love you to take advantage. And they, hopefully, if there is, on whatever platform you're on, if there is a comment section, leave a comment of a movie that Ray and I should watch, because we're rapidly running out of them in this content-saturated world. That's so true. Please send us your recommendations. We'd love to try to find a new movie that we have not seen that we can love. And you know what? Maybe somebody else in our audience will also see that post and also watch that movie and maybe even love it.
That's the goal.
But in we will be back in 2 weeks. Yes, and it's back to me, right?
It's going to be your week.
Is it back to me? Okay, well, I better come up with something good, because I got nothing right now.
Yeah, I need something good to watch.
Well,
something better than Ricky Stenicki.
Well, if that's the
challenge
bar,
set,
that gauntlet is thrown. So tune in next week, or 2 weeks, I should say, and see if I can recommend something better to Ray than Ricky Stenicki. You're not going to want to miss it. So until then, this is Car Ray Rob.
Where I'm Ray.
And I'm Rob. And remember, be defined by the films you love, not the ones you hate. Hey everyone, Rob here. I was just kidding. I know exactly what I'm doing next week. It blew my mind to recently find out that Ray had never seen Gattaca. Can you believe that? Gattaca. Great movie. That is what I'm going to be recommending next week. So if you get a chance, check it out before the episode, so be ready to rock and roll when we are.